It's fun to stay at the YMCA. It's fun to stay at the YMCA. They have everything for young men to enjoy. I don't know. You can hang out with all the boys while we're doing woodworking. That was terrible, but
that was great to open up the show. That was perfect. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Anytime.
Welcome, guys. Got a whole new cast of people that have never been in the studio, never been on the show, never been on a show discussing. Yeah. But you guys have always discussed the trade amongst yourselves and to other people, no?
Of course.
Yeah, yes,
of course.
Right? Yeah. So I know Mike, he's the one that set this up, which is great, and I appreciate you guys taking the time to come out this way. Did a little bit of travel between you guys. How far are we going here now? Travel wise,
50 kilometers for me.
Yeah, I'm in Toronto, so half an hour.
Oh, it's not too bad.
Not too bad.
I'm just 20 minutes from here, like square one.
You're the furthest then.
I was an hour out.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Okay.
Hour with traffic.
Okay.
Oh.
Well, there's always traffic. It's Toronto. So I'll get you guys. So we have Trevor here, right? Yep. So, and how long you been teaching?
I've been teaching for over 12 years.
Okay.
Yeah. Part of that part time. Some of it full-time.
But were you in the industry before you were teaching?
Well, definitely, yes.
Yeah, what did you start as?
I went through the program, the woodworking program from Conestoga, three-year program.
Okay.
And I spent 16-plus years in the industry doing various jobs, anywhere from hand sanding all the way up through to engineering and estimating.
And then got into the teaching?
And got into the teaching part-time, and then that just evolved into... full time.
Well, what I like is that Mike has set this up where we're going to have a teacher and then students. Yep. And then we're going to get both perspectives here. So then everyone can get a very good idea of how this all works. So they can, the ones that haven't gone through it or the ones that have gone through it will remember. And I've heard nothing but positive things about that school. Right. So I have yet to meet somebody that said anything negative about it.
Well, we get rid of them.
Okay. And then next to you, you have Mitch.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I guess you're running your own business right now?
No, I'm currently working for a business in Brampton.
Okay.
Yeah. Salzburg Interiors and Furniture. And I mean, I'm 28 now. I've been doing this for like, I don't know, 9 years, give or take. 9, 10 years.
So right out of the school, right into there?
Pretty much, yeah. Because my dad's a cabinet maker as well. So it just sort of just flowed on. Found a passion for it. And I mean... did the apprenticeship at Conestoga. Trevor was one of our amazing teachers, and it just went on from there.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I love what I do. Yeah.
How many years your dad been doing it?
Well, he's going to be 61 now. So between, I mean, all the years installing in the GTA area, which was around 20 to 25, and now he's a foreman at the company I work at, and he's been the foreman for 2 weeks ago was his 20th year at the company.
Long run, eh?
Yeah.
Woodworking's changed a little bit in the last 20 years, no?
Oh, it's changed a lot.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But for the better,
anyways. No, totally, yeah. Totally. The toys and everything and all the new ideas. And
the toys are a lot of fun.
Some of this stuff is a little too extreme, but we'll get into that. Mm-hmm. And then next year we have Nathan, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you're official, where are you working or what are you doing?
I'm working around the corner from Mitch. We work together, actually, me and Sally.
Okay.
At a place called Neff Beautiful Living.
Okay.
So we do high-end cabinetry around North America, essentially. So I started as an installer there about 5 years ago and just kind of worked my way up and been loving it. So, yeah, I've been all over the States installing, depending on where it is that they send us. And
so you guys are producing it, manufacturing it here, and then you're shipping it and you're going with there with the package to install it?
Yeah, everything's built in Brampton, and then we ship and we fly down and we install it. Yeah, sometimes it's 2 weeks, sometimes it's five, depending on the size of the job, but yeah.
I can only assume that the States, like one end to the other end, is choosing different styles of cabinetry, right?
There's some, yeah. A lot of our business is in Florida, which is all the same kind of style, as you know. Florida's just...
What style would that be?
Very modern and colorful. They like
color?
They like a lot of color.
They're stuck in the 80s or something like that? Like Miami Vice is playing? What's going on there? I don't know. Okay.
Yeah, and then into the northern states, like into New York, you know, some classic stuff and a little bit more modern. But you got a wide range. And we do literally anything and everything. So closets to kitchens to vanities. To
anything that's got a door, a hinge, piece of wood.
That's it. Yeah.
Pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
And last?
Oh, but I come from a different background. I come from teaching mostly for 8-9 years, teaching French, language, literature, and doing a stained glasses. So I'm
artisan.
Yes. So I've been doing cabinet making for about, this is the fifth year, I guess. I've been doing from wrapping, assembling, delivering, everything. Now we're working together. Actually, I'm working for him. He's my boss.
Only at work.
Only at work. Only at work, yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
And then, okay, but you also went through the school as well, too.
Yes.
Everybody.
Okay. Everybody, yeah.
All right, let me just share. So I guess, Mitch, yours is, it's Bozzy Boots?
Yeah, it's
on IG.
Boots.
Bozzy Boots, yeah. Sorry. Bozzy Boots, BOZZYB00TS.
Yes, correct.
And then Nathan, yours is, I'm sorry, Nathan Banks 95.
That's it.
On IG. And then Sally?
Yes.
Is your, it's SALEHZAKK. You can find him on IG. I want to do a quick shout out. I'm wearing Gary Mayer's t-shirt. Thank you so much for the tee. Gary Mayer's Carpentry. I was with him yesterday. We're at the Living Lux trade show that's in town right now. It's the second year that they're doing it. It was actually a pretty good show, a nice intimate show. A lot of designers, a lot of Botox, and a lot of lip filler.
Lots of sights. Lots of sights to be seen.
Yeah, lots of things to see. But okay, so I want to start with the students. How much have they changed over the years? Are they the same kind of person that walks in? Like, wide-eye, I want to learn how to master woodworking.
Not so much. Years ago, that used to be more dedicated to woodworking. Now we get a mix of folks that are... dedicated, and others that, you know, you could tell that mom and dad have said, go to college,
push,
get something. Yeah.
Okay.
So we have a real mix, whereas years ago it was more dedicated. These were folks that were really interested. But there is a divide between full-time courses and the apprenticeship courses. And the apprenticeship courses, of course, those folks have already have that work ethic. They know what an 8 or 9 hour day feels like. So when they come to us, they're all raring to go. It's almost like a mini vacation, I think, for them. So they're a little more dedicated to trying to understand as much as they can when they get to us.
Are they surprised that there's a whole world here that they had no idea about?
Some of them are, yeah.
Yeah.
'Cause we get folks that have maybe worked on stairs all their career, all their time in woodworking. And then we open up the world to veneer. We open up the world to solid wood. And now they realize that there's these other worlds, other things that they can do.
I was just having this conversation with a woodworker, and I was like, are we ever going to run out of white oak? And can white oak be replaced with something else these days?
I hope not.
Everything's white oak nowadays, no?
Mm. It is.
Really, it is.
It's nice. Gosh. Listen, I'm not complaining about it. It looks nice. It's beautiful to win when it's milled and when it's designed and worked with. But it's just like, can we start using other types of woods, or is that not an option on the table?
I would love that. Every single company, like commercially, that I've dealt with, they're all white oak.
That's what I mean. I see
all
it everywhere.
All of them.
Yeah.
And it's no, there's no cherry. There's no walnut. There's not even any red oak. It's just like, okay, here's some white oak, but actually, let's just stain this. Let's stain this black. What do you, why, what? Hello? I don't know.
We're not seeing a lot of that, though. The staining dark? Are
no,
we?
No, I am.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all over the place.
Yeah, it's quite fascinating. I'm like, why are you doing
Canadians
this?
Canadians are doing that?
Yes.
Really?
At least the companies that I've dealt with have, yeah.
That's nice to hear. That's very nice to hear, actually. I just figured that there's other woods that we could probably tackle that would look, you guys would know more than I do, right? But I mean, even this table's ash, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like I couldn't afford a walnut, right? But that's the reason why. But I mean, there's other options on the table, right?
I think a lot of it has to do with market values. And so maybe white oak has come down in price. So people start to go towards that. When that starts to get low, then prices start to drive up and then you see the shift.
I felt it was going shift. Up. Wasn't it going up over the
it
pandemic years?
Be,
like,
yeah.
It was just ludicrous.
It was half and half.
Okay.
What Trevor is saying, there is it is true. Like, that's a lot of the reason why they're going for that. It's just everything else is so expensive. Even past couple of years, like walnut, everything. I mean, yes, white oak as well. All the surge pricing, it was a lot. It's gone down a little bit, but...
It's almost like I would like to have seen that increase in price go to the person doing the work instead of the material being purchased. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean by that?
Mm-hmm.
Because I've always said it, that I think every single trade that does some sort of skill is underpriced. Their number always goes in, and the client or whatever the end purpose of it is always considered that's a little high. But I guess you guys are fighting mass-produced products.
Yeah, and that's the problem that we see is it's not like if you're talking about plumbing or electrical, you can't really buy something cheaper there. Whereas in our industry, if you want a dresser made by somebody local, it's going to cost. Yet they can go down to IKEA and buy a dresser. It's probably going to fall apart in 3 to 5 years, but they look at the price tag. They don't look at the quality that's there.
Do you guys spend the time to educate them, or is it even worth educating them, the end user?
Depends. I think that depends on the person. I mean, I maybe all of us have a different opinion of that, but it totally depends on the person, what they're looking for, what the end factor is, their price point. There's a lot of factors in that.
Okay. I want to get a sense of your background and why you dove into this world, and then everybody else as well, too.
Mm-hmm. I dove into this world just simply because of my dad. I saw his passion into it, and I mean, I did it in high school. I did woodworking in high school, and it was interesting.
You guys still had a shop?
Where?
At the high school level.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Okay. But sometimes we get co-ops, but not really too much anymore at my shop. You know, from that point on, it just, like I said before, it just became a passion. Like, I enjoy being meticulous with stuff. I enjoy having patience, touching up stuff. Making stuff look nice, going through the grits, you know, 100, 150, you know, skipping my grits and then going and making sure it has a nice stain to it. Like, it all goes together so well, and it's so satisfying.
Nathan?
Yeah, I've been working with wood when I was a kid. We went to Boy Scouts, and we'd make little rally cars. We'd race down a hill, and so working around wood tools for a lot of my life. And then in high school, I had a great opportunity to had great teachers in high school that taught me a lot, which just accelerated my passion for it. And then college, I went to George Brown to just do a basic piece of paper. Parents wanted me to get a piece of paper. I see more now the, you know, the importance of it, but at the time didn't really love that. And then that just,
you didn't love it because you weren't really learning the same that you were learning from the high school moments.
Yeah. I learned more on the construction site than I did in school, right?
Yeah.
So I'm
not knocking them or anything like that.
Never been big on school, so never been a school guy. But I think that's common in trades.
School's so, right over there, huh?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. That's a different kind of school.
That's a good school.
That's totally different.
Okay.
Yeah. Apprenticeship. Yeah, working with experienced tradesmen out of school, right? That Trevor's learned so much from him and other teachers is totally different, and they have real world experience. And that's a totally different experience than a regular school, you know, Monday to Friday kind of thing.
Okay. So.
Okay. For me, it was just a job working in a cabinet making.
At first. It was just a job. That's just how you walked in there?
Yes. But then I applied for apprenticeship. But when I went to the college, it like a new world opened up to me. Like, oh, there's a lot I can do. So yeah, that was it for me. I was familiar with job sites, construction sites. I used to make huge stained glass domes, but I never imagined myself working with wood
at all at that moment. So when was it that you saw the light, like it kind of just opened up and realized that I could actually make a career out of wood? Working with wood?
Well, I was working with glasses, with paint, with lead, right? So I had all the material I needed.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I never thought that I can actually make something out of wood for my job.
Okay.
Yeah.
And was it coworkers of yours that kind of gave you some insight into it, or was it the teaching staff kind of thing, or was it
like teachers actually?
Yeah,
teachers.
Okay.
In Conestoga, I found that there's a lot to learn in this trade, so I started my journey in cabinet making. Yeah,
I want to just get right through it. You guys share what tool brand you guys are committed to? I'm curious.
DeWalt all the way.
Okay. All right. Listen, there's no tool. You don't have to be ashamed or anything like that. No, it's just everybody's got their tool brand. I'm just curious on who shaped and I don't even know what Conestoga is using. Like,
We have a variety.
That's what I assume. It's probably a variety, right?
Yeah. So it's basically whatever we can get. We don't have one brand.
Because one brand doesn't have everything that's perfect for every.
That's true. And we try to show these folks different things.
Yes. And then we're talking about hand and power. Right? That's right, so it's like two different lines there, right? Correct. So you're all yellow. You're diehard yellow.
Yeah,
I'm just curious. Why was it yellow? Who taught you that to be yellow?
I started working with a guy that loved DeWalt and had a full truck.
And that's
DeWalt
where it rubbed off. And then yours?
DeWalt for sure. DeWalt, Ridgid, and Festool.
Oh, only Festool. Everything Festool. Okay. I'm joking. Milwaukee.
You're Milwaukee.
I like Milwaukee. Yeah, it's very convenient.
You're rare. You know that, huh?
Yeah.
In this trade, in this skill set, you're a little red. Like, red is rare. No? Am I wrong?
Well, I mean, sometimes there's a little Ridgid drill somewhere here and there, but I am a fan of Milwaukee, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Me, I like Makita.
You like Makita?
Oh, yeah, for the hand drills.
What's your background?
Do you want to go back?
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course. I got theories that I always share. Like, there's certain, something happens, like you said, you were working for somebody and it rubs off, but also Makita generally comes from a European connection. There's a Kevin Bacon European thing going on, right? That's how, I bet you if you share your story, I'm going to find Kevin. You know what I mean?
Well, the background to that is my dad was an electrician and he always used Makita. So I kind of felt the tool and understood the tool and kind of stuck with me.
It just made sense, right?
It made sense, yeah.
What's the family heritage?
Newfie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so you're rare as well, too, eh? You're throwing off my game now. Okay, no, because usually a lot of Eastern European guys and girls, they're the Makita boys and girls, right? So DeWalt is mostly a North American thing. You'll get a lot of carpenters that are diehard that way. You get going with Milwaukee, it's more like you either know a lot of HVAC or plumbers that are kind of rubbing off that way, right?
No, I just, I like the small drills. Like just for, like, let's say I'm putting like drawer fronts on or something like that. Sometimes it's a really small drawer and then all of a sudden you can't really fit like a Ridgid or a DeWalt drill in there. I mean, it's very dependent, right?
Yeah.
But I also like the durability of Milwaukee. That's just... Yeah, they're just me.
They're all good. That's what I've always said. Absolutely. They're all good. Listen, they have failures. They have successes. They're all, and it's whatever tool is going to work for you for the scope that you need to do. Simple as that. It could be whatever color. So there's no hatred towards any of them on my end. That's what it is. But I'd love for you to share the process of someone coming into the school and what to expect and the length of it and what each year kind of teaches that person. And then if you guys can kind of connect that as well too. So when you guys first showed up there, was it nerve-wracking? That kind of mentality, or was it like, I'm in, throw me in, put me in, coach, I want to learn?
Yes.
You know, so if you want to start, Trevor?
Yeah, so the process is, of course, the folks will show up, and they're all quiet at the very first week or so, until they start to become comfortable with each other.
Are they trying to figure out who's who or what the skill level of each person is?
There's a little bit of that, and they're trying not to overstep as well.
Hmm.
It's funny because I joke around with these folks when they come in, they are used to a shop environment that's probably in January is when we start the intake for level one. And so it's a January shop that is maybe not heated to the level that our classrooms will be. And then I take them into the smallest room probably the college and close the door, have the heat belting out. They sit there while I drone on about math. And so, of course, I see the head bobs and stuff like that. So it's a little bit of a change for them at first until they start to realize that, oh, yeah, okay, we've got to get the jumbo coffee for Trevor's math class. then it rolls into these folks start to mesh, which I really love to see because now they start to help each other out. And there's that peer-to-peer learning.
Mm-hmm.
So the first couple of weeks tends to be a little kind of quiet until we get that camaraderie going, and then it starts to really roll. That's when the learning really starts to happen.
And where does it start to excel from that point? Like when they start finding people that they can work with, Is that when it starts?
Yeah, so that's probably...
Because their ideas start to challenge themselves, and they're like, listen, yeah. I need kind of assistance here.
That's right. And you will find somebody that has done that job before, and they will help their neighbor out, and kind of you get this back and forth sort of thing. So that's probably in about week four or five, you start to see that happening, that the folks start to gel. And, of course, when they come back for level two and level three, they're really familiar with each other and their classmates, and it works great. It you really see that growth, especially from level one to level two. You really see that growth.
How many levels are there in the
three
levels, right?
Yeah.
And then you guys just grow from there at that point. What happens in the second level and then the third level?
How so?
School-wise, like what are you excelling?
Oh, school-wise, it's just add on to what they've learned. So first level is basically the basics. What is wood? How does it work? Why do we do the things that we do with it? Level two is now, let's add to that. And so we get into drafting. And level two, they develop working drawings for their capstone project, which then in turn, level three, they build that capstone project. So it's the whole process of learning what happens beyond just the project. So when they're working, building cabinetry, what happens behind the scenes? So they have to go through the drawing process, through approval process, and then, of course, then take that drawing and build.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, and then you guys coming into this environment, how was that experience?
I think it depended from term to term. I don't know about these guys, but first term, it was like getting to know each other, getting our, like, you know, I guess acquainted with each other. It was a fun time, right? I know for me, second and then third semester, second, we're making our capstone projects, trying to figure out what we want to do, our drawings. It was like a little bit stressful. But then you go into the third semester. I mean, for me personally, I was pretty stressed because I made a walnut waterfalled A-quarter just coffee table. And it was stressful. It was super stressful. Getting like, you know, 10 foot lengths and then making that waterfall, making it all go together with like two drawer boxes. And like, yeah, it went together well.
Were you thinking you bit too much?
No. I think it was just the application. So because I really tried to challenge myself that third semester. Now, I'm not a solid guy, right? So I deal all with laminates and stuff like that. Everything laminates, okay? Laminates, veneers, that sort of dealio, right? So, but when it came to the solid, I was like, you know what? I want to do this. So that's what I went with. It was out of my element to an extent. Like I knew what to do and I had planned it and checked with the teachers, checked with my classmates, you know, like, is this like, you know, should I do it this way? La, la, la. And then made that plan, went for it. Turned out really good. I was happy with the end product, but I know that my third semester was pretty stressful.
Mm.
Yeah.
And you guys?
Yeah, starting off, like Trevor said, you're quiet and conserved and, you know, just learning. I think as the different semesters go on, it's a lot like work as you start a new job and as you get more and more. It felt a lot by the third semester. It felt like we were at just a fun job with no real major, you know, commitment or responsibilities, but you're still able to do the stuff you love. But there was that, yeah, that stress level. So it felt more like a work atmosphere. So I think, which is really important, right? Because they're trying to teach us to be effective in the workforce. So that's how it felt to me. It's just like starting a new job, and it just built and built. And by the time we left, yeah, it was like you're working a regular job.
How much is that instilled in you guys where it's like you start realizing, or I guess it starts at the school level, to let go? Because you could be so committed to a project, and then it has to be sold. It has to be, you know, put out there. And maybe you don't get the dollar value that's associated with it. So is it difficult to let go of it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
definitely. You have to make it work. It's like, that's the thing with being a cabinet maker, I find you, like, if you make a mistake, how do you fix it in half the time?
Mm.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Like, you have to be able to fix that. How do you go around the parts to be able to fix that? Right? Like, you know, I had a couple of issues with my cabinet last the third semester. You know, just gluing those joints together, the waterfall joints, I was like, man, that was the part of that whole semester that I was most stressed about. Like, how am I going to make sure that this goes together well? Because there was also a back on it, right? And I was like, man, this is stressful. And as soon as that was done, I was relieved. Everything went together after that smoothly. It was like, just like butter.
And you guys?
For me, well, the first year for me was the best one. But the second,
because it was a new world, it was like, yes, new things were happening.
Exactly. Okay. I found that okay, this is serious and I can learn, right? It's not just a job for me. And the second year was hard, mostly because it wasn't about the cabinet making or about the college. It was most about the about COVID, right? And the third semester, I was feeling like a cabinet maker. You know, it was easier for me than the second one or the first one. But the first one was, I have good memories of it. Yeah, I was passionate about, this is where my passions towards woodworking starts. So it was.
What's the drop off like? Because I mean, we hear about other career options where you're getting into med school, you get into law, you get into whatever, and you got a lecture hall and you got hundreds and hundreds of people in there, and you got the professor coming out saying, all right, who wants to be what? And everybody puts their hands up, and then he goes, well, by the way, just the front row is going to be in the workforce. That's not the case with woodworking. That's not the case with tradespeople in general, I think. But there is still some drop-off, right? You guys saw some people that you probably were getting acquainted with, that you were learning from, that probably decided they didn't want to be a part of this world, right? Was that not the case?
It was a little.
Just that's what I'm saying. It's probably small, right?
Well, the apprenticeship is, the drop-off is very little. Mm-hmm. We find that you may see one person, maybe two people out of that, let's say level one, that don't come back for level two.
Okay.
There's some that will defer it. They may be in a job that takes a lot of, they're busy in that particular month or two that the folks are coming back to school. So they defer for a year. But most of the times we see for level one, level two, we see the same group get together at the same time and come back. It's level three is when you start to see that divide a bit. And the drop off, easily probably three, four people that kind of either defer or don't come back after level three. And no idea what the reasoning is behind that. Whether
we don't know. Everyone's busy, got personal lives. Right, everything's exactly. going on.
Or
yeah.
they maybe change jobs. It's hard to say.
Yeah. And then I guess you guys, I mean, was it easy for you, because you mentioned about the solids. Mm-hmm. But it's 2024, right? Like solids are not the norm. They're veneers, right? So it's a lot of engineering going on. But I'm sure that you guys are teaching, it's living, breathing wood. It's a natural element. So it reacts differently depending on what you guys do to it, right? And we've all learned those hard lessons. Sometimes we're building something and the glue held really well, but it split the wood. You know, and you're like, wow, that's amazing that happened. But you guys, you educate them on that. You guys learn. Did you guys grasp that really well?
Yeah.
Coming in, like you're realizing that this solid material is a living, breathing item, right?
Yep.
Either we don't grasp it, like in the book sense, or we grasp it physically doing it, right? Yeah. Like I literally went, at my work, I went on the CNC and I made a little groove out saying, wood moves, right? Mm-hmm. And I went and put it on my bench, and it's still there. It's just hanging there, right? It's just like a little remembrance thing, you know, because it's just, it moves, right? It moves. So, you know, it's a rule of thumb, if anything. You know?
Any other?
It's not a lot.
It happens a lot, right?
Like I can hear Trevor saying it.
Rule number one.
All the time, yeah.
Because it does, right? And also the idea of homes. Like how people keep their homes and the humidity level, like all that crap, it all factors into that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. We all discover that firsthand when you're putting a project or you're building something, you see it. It just happens, right? Yeah. But it's hard to explain to clients. I mean, you guys got to, that's the business side of the industry where you start educating the clients on what's going to potentially happen to this piece, right?
Yeah, the sales side, yeah.
Was that a fun side?
It's not a fun side.
No, but
sometimes it's great. Sometimes it depends on the client.
Right? Is it
sometimes
because you're like you're so wrapped around the skill that you don't really want to embrace the business side of it? I've always said to everybody that comes into construction, there's still a business component. If not, it's not a 50-50. Mm. I don't want to treat it as a 50-50. You should learn it that it's probably going to be skewed a little more on the business side. That's where I was going with about letting go of the piece. You know, like we've all built certain things and we're like, okay, I want to sell it now. But you're not getting the price that you thought you should get it, but eventually you have to let it go. But that's the business side of you coming in as a salesperson. And you guys are obviously shedding some light on that too when they're coming in. Like, it can be a hobby, but this is primarily a business.
Yeah, so you got to know when you are done working on that piece and it's time to ship it or give it to the customer sort of thing.
Bubble wrap it and ship it. Yeah. Get it out there, right? That's just how, and then pray that it showed up.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully.
That's a hard thing to learn, though, is letting that go. It takes time. Yeah.
How do you think you can get to it faster? Or is it something that you can teach? You can't. You got to experience it, right?
You kind of have to experience it. Yeah,
that's how I totally see it. How good are you guys and also the classes of today understanding the history of woodworking? Are you guys respectful of where woodworking came from? Because it's nice to have all the tools. And, you know, you've got those rock and rollers that are out there just like, I'm going to buy the arsenal of tools, which is going to make me look like a woodworker. I'd rather you be a woodworker and then eventually buy these arsenal of tools, right? Mm. So are you guys respectful of the history, where things came from, how things were done, all that stuff?
It was a hard time back then. I mean, like, they, you know, it wasn't actually until a couple of days ago that I was learning about all these old tools. There was no reason for it. I was just, you know, just browsing, right? And I was like, why? Like, there's so many old tools that comparison to now, it's just so much easier to now. And, like, if anything, I'm thankful for. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a lot more physically demanding, of course. I mean, it still is now, mind you, okay? But it was a lot more rigorous before.
Yeah, I can't imagine cutting veneer by hand.
Or even, like, I remember seeing that there was a hand-powered shaper. Okay, I never knew that. Maybe you've heard of it, Trevor. Like, there was a shaper that you could actually have with two hands, and people can go around with this shaper and just do whatever they wanted with
by
it.
By hand?
By hand. It's like a two-handed shaper. And I was looking at pictures of this. I'm like, OSHA would not be happy about this.
No.
Yeah. They would not be happy.
It's dangerous if you just, like, veer off or a tiny bit.
Oh, yeah. I, like, just all of a sudden kick back. Well, you don't have a stomach anymore. Mm. But that's exactly how I looked in the pictures. But back then, it is what it is. That's how it was, right?
Yeah.
So what are you going to do?
Yeah, I feel like there's some tools that have been developed for the worse and some that have been developed for the better. Like, there's a lot of tools that I respect and still try to use when I can that are just work better. There's no point in
what comes to mind right now. Like, what do you?
Hand planers, a lot, any hand joinery, using chisels. I mean, like, you know, doing dovetails on a machine is great, but the work and the authenticity of a hand-done dovetail drawer is so much nicer. It just, right? So if you appreciate the quality of that, then I think that's where you can appreciate the
I think part of that, hand, too, is that you need to understand how to do it with the hand tools to be able to get good at doing it with machines.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Got to know the process. Mm-hmm. It's lengthy, but it's just a feels-good thing afterwards. You do dovetails by hand. It's time-consuming, but it feels good. I mean, it's a feels-good thing after, you know.
But I just get the sense that today's kids, they don't want to take the time to understand the process of that past.
Depends on the person.
Yeah, right? Totally it is. But I'm just trying to – it's an overall blanket, but I'm just getting the sense that they want to get to third level, let's say. I feel that they want to get their – and it's not just woodworking.
More,
I think it's all trades.
Immediate results.
Yeah. Like, they really want to get to the top. And it's like I'll always – pick a fight where it's like they want to enter at the midpoint or top instead of start at the bottom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where there's, it's like you want to learn the little lessons from the beginning.
There's even the focus for high tech stuff as well, which we teach as well. But the high tech, again, if you don't understand the principles behind how a chisel cuts through a piece of wood,
exactly,
then you can't really understand why that machine is doing something better one way and not the other sort of thing. So there has to be that understanding, that basic understanding.
Has the shop sounds changed because a lot of CNC is going on, a lot of that, like, it's a different kind of hum, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Versus the older way of doing things?
I think myself, it's changed for the better because we're dealing with different heads now. So just CNC machines apart, planing, jointing, any of those machines, we used to have straight knives, and they make a lot of noise. In our shop in particular, we've got helical heads, very quiet. So the noise, I think, has dropped down. Now, the CNCs, yeah, they do add a little bit of noise to it, but we're doing different things with it to kind of compensate for that.
How quickly were you guys to learn the whole dB thing, decibels, and understanding that certain tools, including impact drivers, whatever, are just well outside the norm of health and safety?
First year. Yeah. We were taught that, right?
Yeah. You guys are totally bringing it up, right? Because, I mean, it's not the coolest to be, and I come from a generation, we never wore the muffs, right? We were always just doing things, and it was like, now we're getting it because we have the ring in, right? So, but that's what you want to try to avoid, right? Mm-hmm. And same with the machines. They're the same thing, too. They're getting loud, but it's just like, it's not that much effort to put cans on.
Yeah.
And then communicate with people that way, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think like a lot of it is like a lot of people now, they have just headphones on. Like, let's say you're working in an actual shop, right? Mm-hmm. You have some type of not noise canceling headphones, but at least some that, you know, will lower the sound.
Reduce, yeah.
And that's actually nice. You know, you can do woodworking and have a podcast on, you know, like,
yeah,
sometimes whatever, listen to you know, like, yeah.
No, that's what I'm hearing, right? That's the good thing about it. But as long as you're not distracted with a joke or two or something, and then you do something wrong.
Don't be on a shaper or something and all of a sudden listening to a podcast. Oh my God, he said that. And then now you're handless.
I want to ask you guys, is there loyalty to glue? Is there loyalty to oils?
Like type of glue or type
of oil? Yeah. I've had guys come in here and they're like, there's loyalty to certain glues and there's just hatred towards other glues. And I just like, listen, whatever works for you.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. They probably screwed up like a $10,000 thing because of some type of glue not working out correctly. So it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't have one personally.
Yeah. You, no? Yeah.
Don't work with enough finishing stuff to really have preference.
Neither. Yeah.
What do you guys at the school?
We've got the regular PVA. That's polyvinyl acetate. I like myself for personal projects. I like the carpentry glue. I find it's a little thicker.
Elmer's.
A little more expensive, yeah.
Yeah.
So brand-wise, I don't care, but I like
just good old carpenter yellow glue.
Good old carpenter yellow glue, yeah.
That's it,
and it tacks up a little bit nicer, grabs the wood a little bit nicer, so it's just a personal thing for me. I've had PVA glue before that was like water, and it was horrible to work with.
Just saturated into the wood?
Well, it just oozes out everywhere. Yeah. Oh. It was messy. It was, so I like that thicker stuff.
Yeah.
But I find that PVA glue does hold really well.
It's good.
We use the same stuff that we did at Costco at work. Yep. And you break the wood before you break the miter. Yep. It's unreal. Mm. But it is everywhere.
Well, then it kind of makes you feel good when you break the wood instead of the miter, right? Yeah. You're I actually did it right? Mm.
Yeah.
Right and wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just a lot of cleanup.
Yeah. That's just the pain of it, right? Did you guys feel you were ready when you were done? Like you were ready for the world of woodworking? Or you still had things to learn?
Oh, still had have a lot to learn.
Even still today?
Even still today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like for me, at the end of my third semester, I had all my hours for to write the Red Seal right away. But at the same time, too, I didn't stop learning. I'm not going to stop learning because it's just honestly, woodworking is becoming very innovative now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so many cool technologies out there. Like even for me personally, like I'm thinking of getting a hobby CNC, possibly even just some type of laser engraver. Stuff like that,
3D like a little printer. 3 foot by 3 foot or something like a little
something like that. I'm looking into it. I mean, there's a little bit of put down on the money side, but you can do a lot of stuff with that. Like maybe even 3 foot by 3 foot. It depends on the bed, but you can make your whole kitchen just from that if you have a good CNC.
Like, it's true, yeah.
I mean, really. I mean, that's all that we do at our shop is all of our gables, everything is just cut all by CNC. We don't even use the data machine anymore except for drawers. It's just perfectly cut every time.
Are you guys done with Live Edge and epoxy or what?
I think I have like one job coming up.
I'm done with it. I'm done with it. I'm sorry.
It's starting to phase out.
Yeah. I was phasing out years ago for me. Yeah. Like I was just done with Live Edge. And epoxy is okay. It depends on the scenario. But you get a lot of guys sharing on social media. I mean, it's wonderful to see the back of an alligator going through wood and all the stuff like that. But I'm like, how practical is that table? Can you have dinner on that table? No, you can't, right? It's more of, a, I guess, a man cave or like it's just a showpiece. Mm-hmm. Like there's still some practicality behind the woodworking, isn't there? Like that you guys have to be conscious of it?
There's a lot of it that goes into it. Like it, you go on YouTube, you look up guys making tables where they have like, there was one table I saw and some guy did some little Star Wars thing in it, right? Little miniature AT&Ts in the middle of it. And then it's like a whole fight going on in the middle of the table. And I think he epoxied it or something.
He did epoxy, yeah.
Yeah, okay, maybe he wants the same thing. And it was really cool. But I was like, man. I don't know about that. I would be afraid to even look at it that it's going to scratch. I don't know. Like, just out of nowhere, I'm just like, this is too precious to literally do anything on. Mm. That would be me personally. If I made that, I would be like, just don't do anything on this, please.
Can agree more. It's cool to look at, but
yeah.
Not really practical.
I do like that I'm starting to see some, but not a lot of it, mixed materials. And so I'm starting to see, instead of the epoxy options, they're starting to go with like either different kinds of concrete, different kinds of metal inlays and things like that. I like that you're now getting the woodworkers to start dabbling in different materials to connect with the woodworking, which poses a whole new world of challenges for you guys, right?
Yes.
Because now we go back to science class, right?
Yeah.
We work with a lot of man-made stuff, so we don't work at all any solids, really. Some headers and jams when we do doors.
But sometimes, yeah.
Very rarely. So it's all man-made product. And all integrated, steel and metal and glass and mirrors. And so it's all stable, right?
We don't
work for that aspect of wood moving. So we don't find that a lot, what we do. I find that's more of a challenge with solid wood, right?
But that's where you get into the furniture pieces, right? You start getting people challenging themselves. I'm even seeing some people work with leather and incorporating it with the woodworking, right? Like almost you're stretching it over the wood and then you're framed. I like the idea of you thinking outside of just woods, you know, different species, and you're actually thinking about, well, what can I do with this? What can I do with that? And that's where I would like to see that whole epoxy live edge world start to go, where people start dabbling into other traits. Like concrete is a big one for me. I like the concrete, as we all know, it is that traditional sidewalk gray looking, but that's not concrete. Concrete is so much more than that. There's different versions of it, right? Mm-hmm. And plus, I mean, I'm starting to see certain trades bringing in the whole Venetian plastering idea of micro cements and things like that. And that still works really well with wood. And I'm seeing what people are figuring out things outside of North America. And it looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. It totally looks beautiful.
Well, I mean, even now, concrete and epoxy, that's not my world. I know very little about it. I mean, how would you connect the two? Like from your own.
That's where science class comes back in.
That'd be a lot of fun. That'd be cool.
It'd be interesting to see. Really, I'm sure there's going to be a mistake or two in the very beginning, and then you try to figure it out. And now you're pulling out a surface grinder to take care of the concrete part, and you're bringing out a sander to take care of the wood part, and then the two shall never meet. You know what I mean? Otherwise, you're going to get some marks on either side, right? But that's always a challenging way to do things. Is that like the creativity? Have you seen some surprising things as students come in and?
Yeah,
I was just messing around with this last weekend kind of idea.
The capstone projects that we see come through are evolving. You see, it started off years ago that it was just boxes. And you know, your average furniture and that sort of thing. What we've seen is that it's now shifting in terms of style, as well as products like that. You know, they're introducing epoxy, they're introducing glass, they're introducing different things like stone. We had one student many years ago that actually took pencil crayons and glued them all together and sliced them so you saw the ends and used that like a veneer.
Yeah,
so
that's cool.
These ideas are kind of starting to come up and change how we kind of approach things, how we do things. So, you know, that in itself brought up some new challenges and things like that. But really, it's really expanding away from just straight wood and, you know, here's a dresser or here's a nightstand into more creative ideas.
Are there some pieces that you guys have seen other people from around the world or on social or just job sites that you've looked at and go, damn, that's actually kind of nice?
There's a guy out of Europe that does that veneer bending.
Oh, yes, the French guy.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Veneer bending?
Yeah, he does a lot of layers veneer, and then he bends it in really obscure shapes, and it's incredible.
To create what, like just art pieces?
Just art pieces, wood sculpture art pieces, yeah.
No, some practical tables, too.
It's shelves. Really cool. Yeah.
How thick are the veneers that he's laminating together?
You probably got no more than 12 mil.
Yeah. I guess it's 5/8. Maybe five.
And he's shaping it which way? He's got jigs that he set up and.
Yeah, I guess. He doesn't get into a lot of how he does it much. Just
you see the end product.
End product, yeah.
He doesn't want to give a secret out.
Well, that's the thing about you guys, which is, and I totally respect that, is like you should just show 50% of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the person who's following or paying attention, let them figure out a different path on the other 50%. That's mm-hmm. how I think it should be.
That's the fun part.
Yeah.
You gotta see how you think you would want to
where you would take the ending of this story. Mm-hmm. Simple as that, right? And then this is how I started it. How would you end it?
Mm-hmm.
And then someone else is going to do the exact same thing. That's what you want to see. And when you get new students coming in here.
Reverse engineer it.
Yeah, there's no reason to give you A to Z and all of a sudden. No, but there's no fun in that.
There's got to be that exploration of how to solve these things. Yeah. If there's a steady diet of here's how you should do it, then there won't be that learning. There won't be that thinking that happens to figure out how to make that particular piece.
Do you guys tackle stereotomy at the school?
Stereotomy?
Yeah. Stereotomy. Oh, you don't?
Oh,
Joinery and hand carving. No, you guys don't really tackle that, eh? We've had a few in the show, in the studio.
We do joinery, but your basic joinery. That's what the level one starts off with, your basic joinery. But carving, no. As much as I'd love to see it in.
It's like rafter pointing and beam and mortise and tenon, like larger scale. Everything's all hand drawn on a 2D and then is developed on a 3D on a, here's a piece of wood and you get a one shot at it kind of thing.
Yeah, we don't do that.
Yeah.
Ooh, I would have loved to learn that though. That would.
Cool. Yeah.
Well, there's a few guys that are online that do it. They have some courses and it's just like, I've had three or four of them in the studio and we talked about it quite a bit and they brought some things that are not in the studio right now. But I mean actually he brought these things here that it was showing some of his joinery that he did just in traditional stuff. But it was just more about the rafters. And just how they figure out how to carve it.
Japanese joinery that kind of fits right into
that kind of stuff.
Would be really cool.
Yeah. Sashimono, they call it.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's very challenging stuff.
Right? No nails, no glue, no screws.
Well, in all fairness, we had the teacher in here and he was saying that there are some nails, there are some glue that like they make it seem, they romanticize it.
Okay.
It's just wood. It's just wood just meets together. And I don't know. There's some fasteners.
There has to be. Because, I was watching a video on that the other day. They're really cool.
Mm.
They're really cool. Yeah.
Do you guys have a favorite species? Wood that you go to? I know we started the show earlier and we're talking about white oak quite a bit, but is there any exotic woods that you guys like to work with?
Myself, personally, I like rosewood. But I can't work with it because I'm allergic to it.
I knew a guy who was allergic to cedar, and I was well, there goes all the deck and fencing business.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, rosewood's a beautiful wood. It's
what dense. Is it in the wood that's making you allergic?
The oils.
Oh.
Yeah. And, of course, the family that it comes from is very large, so I can't really work with anything that falls within that family.
But it's a beautiful grain. It's a beautiful color. It's a
beautiful grain, beautiful color.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful wood to shape, to work with. Yeah.
You guys?
I love working with cherry and purple heart.
Beautiful
combination.
I don't have a favorite, but walnut, teak, purple heart, and zebra wood.
Mm-hmm.
Makassar. Yeah.
For me, it's hands down, it's zebra.
Zebra
wood. Toxic as heck, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not going to make a cutting board out of it. But, I would love a centerpiece. Close second, it has to be walnut. I love walnut. I don't know. Everything about it. It's staining.
It's just beautiful looking.
Yeah. I would love to see it more.
How come nobody really talks about all the glue that's put into a cutting board and when you use it for cutting board purposes?
They don't think of it. Even the same reason they put it in a dishwasher afterwards. Like a lot of people,
who puts a handmade or even machine made
unknowing clients
into
a lot of people do
a dishwasher yeah. with a water temperature of 140, I think it is, or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Who puts Ooh. That in there? I don't understand that.
Don't know.
They do it.
They do.
Don't know what you don't know, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. They do it. They it's very unfortunate.
And then it comes out and it has to be rebuilt again.
And then it's just thrown in the garbage or used as firewood. Sorry. It's, don't throw it in the garbage. Use as firewood.
I just never understood that you're always doing these chopping and then it's got all this glue. And I love some of the artists that are out there and they're just intricate patterns. But then when I see the stages and it's just like glue. Mm. And then I'm like, that's a lot of glue. And I'm like, I hope the glue tastes good.
Yeah.
I feel like glue's come a long way, right? There's a lot of eco-friendly and health-friendly, more friendly glue than there was in the past.
Like the animal glue.
Yeah. Well, then again, when we were kids in elementary school, we used to like eat the glue off of our projects.
Yeah,
right?
Elmer's.
Elmer's, right? So it was totally edible. We were all normal. Like, we have a twitch now and then. That's about it. Yeah. But
that's normal. It's okay.
Is there any project that you guys haven't tackled yet that you want to? It's been on the drawing board? Something that has just escaped you? I guess time or...
Me, capped dovetails, hand cut dovetails. I've seen it done. Haven't done it myself. Quite interesting. It's if you were to cut a regular hand cut dovetail, then you cut a matching piece that kind of is parallel to it, contrasting wood. So you could do a maple and walnut sort of thing. Then you recut the dovetail. So you cut that end off and you recut it, and what it ends up looking like is a hand-cut dovetail with a border about an eighth of an inch around it. That's a different color.
What you're talking about,
And then you cut that into the matching piece to make your box or what have you. A lot of accuracy involved, but I haven't had the time to kind of play around with it just yet.
Gentlemen, anything?
Nothing off the top of my head. Lots. I don't really want to talk about nothing. I want one specific thing, I think, or curve parts, maybe. We're all man-made stuff, right? So I think of just curve panels and wall paneling and that kind of stuff, and different
layers with panels or shaping them, or
I'm an installer, so putting things together, the final is more kind of my thing of what I love, not necessarily building it. I enjoy building from a hobby perspective, solid wood stuff, but I much prefer installing stuff. So, yeah, big curved walls and ceiling panels that are really tall and long and have different materials integrated into them. The kind of stuff's really tricky and fun to tackle. We don't do enough of it, and it'd be kind of cool to do more of it.
Well, there is this Persian style of stained glasses, which are part as glasses and between is wood. Me and my wife, we used to restore the panels of Persian stained glasses.
Okay.
But actually making it is one of my dreams, to be able to make that.
So you're working with the lead and the glass and the wood?
No lead.
No lead?
Wood and glass, that's
just
it.
Just wood and glass?
Yeah, just wood and glass. So the between the glass pieces, it's all wood. Yeah.
For me, that's a hard choice. I don't know. I would love to make my own, dining room set, table, the whole china cabinet thing. I've never done anything to that extent, whether it's out of solid or veneered products. I mean, I don't really know, but I would love to do that.
Would it be a more contemporary style or more traditional or a mix?
I think a mix.
Okay.
I think a mix. Just the entire process of it. I know that it would be one hell of a dining room set. I would love to do that. Just don't have the space.
Well, then that's how you got to design a dining room table that can fit into a small space and when needed be larger so they can accommodate a larger group, right?
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
Are clients these days smarter, respectful of the craft?
Depends. Clients we work with have a lot of money. Don't really care. They say, build it. I want it like this. Build it.
As long as it looks good in the photograph?
As long as it looks good, yeah. We work with a lot of high.
Yeah, but don't those high-end clients still go up there and touch it? Like, is that not a thing anymore, or is it just us weird people? No. We always touch wood, right? Don't we always touch wood?
Yeah, of course.
It's more of an aesthetic.
But those clients, do they not appreciate the touch to wood and see the craftsmanship and the joinery and the... No?
I don't think they touch wood or grass. I mean, I don't know.
Our clientele at least doesn't. They like the look of it. They like the aesthetic. It's a big trophy. It's a big show. Yeah.
Are people still doing like the whole wood library study? That's not a thing anymore.
Not the traditional way.
No.
All flat, modern.
Yeah, everything flush. Yeah. Flush cabinets.
Euro laminates. High gloss.
Yeah. Wow.
Painted.
But then when we travel and we go to different buildings and we walk into and we see this craftsmanship from some century ago or whatever, we're in awe of it. And we were like, I would love to have that in my own place or something like that. But we start calculating the numbers behind it. And we're like, oh, that's why we can't afford it. But people who can afford it, they're not choosing that. Such a missed opportunity, no?
Yeah. I think it's the understanding the work that goes into that. Like as a woodworker, you walk into a vast library that's got wood paneling and wood shelving everywhere. You can appreciate that.
Yeah.
You can appreciate the work that went to it. But if you don't understand woodworking, then maybe it's just a lot of wood.
But it's such a shame because it's, and I'm not knocking the drywallers, and I'm as much as they think that their most important trade on building a structure, which they're not, you have an opportunity to create something interesting on that wall. Yeah. And when I say interesting, it's like some sort of detail paneling or what have you. And then also the ceiling. Like I agree with you, like clients will spend more time and effort trying to figure out that piece of furniture, that table or that end chair or whatever it is, or possibly a coffered ceiling, or even spend a little bit of effort on the hardwood flooring that they're deciding on, whether that's, I don't know, Merbau or something like that, or some exotic wood on the flooring. But then they'll just dismiss it and just put drywall on the walls, which is, why not do something interesting panel-wise, right?
Yeah.
Like I saw at that show, there was a gable of a kitchen that integrated a bead. It was a very unique bead on the gable side of a kitchen panel, and it integrated the cold air return.
Oh, okay.
And I actually was looking at it, and I saw briefly, because you could see the darkness of the holes in between, so they just eliminated certain sections of it. And I said, that's pure genius, because now they just hidden this, integrated into it. And I started thinking, why can't that be used on a wall application in a standard home? Mm-hmm. It can. Sure, you can just fit it into the drywall. And that's what I'm saying is that the woodworkers, I think, would start coming up with those ideas, but the clients need to listen to you guys so then they can say, sure, we want to get that done. But it's kind of sad to hear that they just want a picture. Looks good.
Yeah.
There's still some that do.
Usually,
of course, yeah, but the majority of it, right? And that's what we've had a lot of people in here saying that just the Canadian mindset is about being safe and secure and just choosing what won't rock the boat, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
But you can sell easily.
Is the boat made out of wood or is it made out of fiberglass, right? That's where I go back to. Like, do we not stare at old wooden boats? Like, do we not stare at the, and we appreciate the quality of that craftsmanship? And why not do that in the entire house at that point, right?
Absolutely. Like, for me anyways, if I see something cool, I'm like, how did you build that?
Yes.
That's my go-to. I'm like, how did you do this corner? How did you put this together? What was the process look like? What did that look like? And that's always the interesting thing. And it's just like, you just try to think ahead. Try to think ahead five steps or something.
And there's a lot of that reversing going on, right, with the students.
Reverse engineering, yeah. We get that a lot, too. The students want to do something. How do I do this? They show you a picture. How can I make this? So there is that issue of having to reverse engineer it all.
And what's it like online for a woodworker? If they want to, before they get into school, is there a good amount of resource online for them to get a good idea of what this is about to be for them? Or is it just a bunch of showboaters kind of thing?
I think there are people that are sharing so much on YouTube. And on Instagram.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there's a lot. Yeah. A lot you can learn. Yeah. I myself, I follow a lot of guys that I pay close attention to and learn a lot from. Yeah, just online.
It's all the tricks. Yeah. Like you go on an Instagram reel, YouTube, like short, something like that. And all of a sudden there's a guy, this is how you scribe this in a unique way. Like there's not just one way to scribe something, right? Yeah. But you know, oh, okay, like he's doing it this way or something. That's cool, you know. But there is, I think there is a lot of resources out there, a big one being YouTube. Yep. Like the amount of time I've spent on YouTube just looking at how certain people do things. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, you know, I never would have thought to do this. You know, that's the really nice thing about woodworking, though. You know, a cabinet is a cabinet. It's a box, right? But there's 100 different ways to build it.
Yeah.
And that's the cool part of it. You hone your technique. You find your way. What is the most efficient? What is the best way to do this? Can I add this to it? If I screw up, how do I fix that? I love it.
There's an inherent danger with YouTube as well, for the sheer fact that us as woodworkers, we know what's dangerous and what's not dangerous.
Oh, yes.
Oh, God.
I see a lot of stuff on YouTube where somebody's got the blade cranked all the way up to the highest spot, mm-hmm. and they're pushing a half-inch piece between the fence and the blade with their hands, you know, and no guard in sight. So, you know, the four of us here would look at that and say, okay, yeah, we're not going to do that. But average homeowner that sees this YouTube video and looks at it and says, oh, I can do that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, we know what happens after that. So there's that danger there.
There was a video that I did years ago, like 10, 12 years ago, where I actually put ash, thermally modified ash, similar to this wood, in a shower, in a real wet. I made it all waterproof, and it was just an idea that I had, and it worked really well. And then it was a bathroom that was so tall. It was like 12 feet tall. So then I created a curve on it to just make it look shorter. And it was just, it ended up being, the wood continued on the ceiling. And then I remember a homeowner reaching out to me going, that's a very cool idea. I think I'm going to try that this weekend. I'm like, just good luck. That's how all I wrote. It's just good luck. It's not for a DIYer, right? That's where I just get mm-hmm. such a little bit of hatred. Like you said, yeah, they'll see these videos thinking that the DIYer can tackle this week. Mm-hmm. And they're even just ignoring level one, which is just safety. And you start understanding tools bite. And they mm-hmm. bite hard if you're not doing things properly, right?
Oh, yeah. Like even, for example, right, the other week, so on Reddit, okay, the woodworking subreddit, okay, that's a big one, okay, and you know, obviously I'm sub to that. And sometimes I'm going through there and I'm like looking at these pictures of people and they're like, oh, I'm cutting a certain thing this way. Now, mind you, they're checking if this is safe or not, which is great. Good for them. Thankfully, they're not going to lose a hand. But the setup that they have is like the most unsafe thing I've ever seen. And I'm like, wow, like, do not do this. And thankfully, like, a lot of other people other than me are also saying the same thing. So it's not just like a divide, you know. It's,
yeah.
You know, it's a pretty safe consensus. Do not do that, you know. Like, but exactly like you're
are
saying.
Are they aware of it? Are they responding back to some of the comments and saying, yeah, no, I just set it up for the video, or yeah, I messed up.
You know what? 25% of them, some guy was like, you know what? I posted this and I went and did it anyways, and then it broke. And I was like, huh, okay, well. But, the other 75%, you know, they're pretty receptive. I mean, a lot of people in the woodworking community pretty respectful about that, you know? Like, if there's somebody that has more experience than you and, you know, they're telling you, okay, this might not be the best way of doing it. Try this instead, or take it into thought, you know? It's up to them how they ultimately like lead from there and go from there how they want to do it. But at least, you know, they're taking it into a factor.
Like, it kind of goes back to your respect thing. We've learned to respect that experience. I don't think that's in the kids, like you're saying, nowadays. They don't necessarily respect that experience and what might go wrong. They just, I'll just figure it out.
Yeah, that's where the history part of it comes from. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, we've all seen those videos online where you're seeing these just open blades, just monster blades, and they're somewhere in Asia. And the person who's operating is not working with 10 digits, right? Like, there's obviously something happened at some point. But yeah. It's a little scary, right? I mean, I even Absolutely. Get nervous sometimes when I see plaster or styrofoam crown guys, and they take the guard off, and they're using a concrete blade. Concrete blade will still bite. It will still leave not a little bruise. It will bite. You know what I mean? But for them to achieve the cut that they need for that miter, they have to have the guard off, which is really scary at that point, right?
Yeah. When I see things like that, my fingers shake. Yeah.
It's nerve-wracking. I guess the thought process is you start thinking about all the projects you won't be able to build later on. If you're removing your two main tools, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are you guys hopeful of more and more people getting into this trade, this particular set of skills? You think there's a lot of people that are wanting to get into this?
I think there's a lot of people that think they want to get into it.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
They show up to work and they think one thing and they are hit with a harsh reality. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're seeing that a lot. A lot of the new hires I have, they show up, they're all excited, and they're beat down after 3 months because they're like, I didn't think this was going to be like this. I didn't think it was going to be this hard to learn this. I wanted to be at the top already. There's a lot of that.
What is it? The prep work or like just the math process, the sanding process, like just
it's like everything.
It's just like everything.
There's work involved, right?
Yeah, you need to experience it to know it. It's not something you can just learn on a chalkboard.
Well, I think they come in with the expectation that they're going to be put on the most elaborate job, and
not always the case.
Build some fantastic project when reality is you got to build that experience first before you get onto those types of jobs.
Yeah, like nobody likes sanding, right? Nobody likes sanding. If you like sanding, please tell me.
I want to give you a gift. It's therapeutic at times, okay? But
I mean, but at the same time, too, you need to learn how to do it. You need to learn how to go through the grits. You need to know what you're looking for. You need to have like your little strobe light going through something like a solid piece of wood. Is there imperfection there? I gotta get it. I gotta do whatever I need to do to it. And nobody wants to do it. It's very hard to find people that want to go through the entire woodworking experience and, you know, are willing to go through the sanding portion.
Or any of that grunt type stuff.
But do they not, do you guys not show the two samples? Like, do you not show them the finished product of something that was properly done through all the stages?
Yeah.
And then show them something else that was not properly done and the understanding going back to we touch and feel stuff? And they don't get it. They don't clue in at that moment that it takes.
Say yes, I get it.
At that point, right?
Yeah. But they might say yes. They might not do it, right? I understand. Let me go.
I think it's the process.
Impatience and
it's patience.
Want to be up top.
Do they have a mindset where the new tools are kind of teaching them a little bit that they don't have to go through all the stages? Like this is a better tool, so then I don't have to go through all the grits, or I could cheat. You cheat, you get caught because I'll feel it.
Depends. I think it depends on the application, depends on what you're using, wood-wise or finish-wise.
What's the hurry? Is it the money motivated? Or is it
for them?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Everybody wants that, you know, 30, 40, 50 bucks an hour, but they don't want to know how to get to that point. Like I said before, right? If you make a mistake in woodworking, it happens a lot, right? You just, something doesn't go right somewhere along the lines. How do you fix that in half the time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In order to do that, you need that experience. You need that, like, let's say the sanding experience, right? Like going through the grits, right? You gotta know what to do in these certain like situations in order how to fix something. They don't want to do it.
Yeah, I heard it said many times, a good woodworker is not someone who can do good work, but who can fix and hide all their mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I've said that about woodworking a million times, that woodworking is a basic knowledge with a bag full of tricks. That's really what it is.
Yeah. You
know, how do I fix that? How do I machine this when that machine is broken down? It's just all those little tricks, and that comes with time.
And then, but the truth is, I guess the market doesn't really appreciate that, or they don't see any of that.
They don't see any of it. Yeah.
They're not even aware of it, right?
That's right.
They just see the end product and they're like, wow, that's an amazing piece. But they have no idea what hurdles you guys jumped to get it to that point, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cabinet making is very unique. There's so many processes behind the scenes that nobody thinks about. You get the job. The designer does the drawing, does the draft, right? Goes through estimating. And then it has to go through the company draftsman. And then from the company draftsman, it goes through the actual cutting process, taking the drawing, getting the parts, thinking about how it's going to go together, changes that need to be made there, and then it goes to the cutting process, the layout process, other processing processes, you know, like, and then it goes to the bench, you know, assembly. What goes wrong on the bench? Something didn't go to what you wanted to do, and then all of a sudden, then you stage it. You put it all together, see how it looks nice, blah, 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 but perhaps it goes to finishing. Then you go through those stages. And then it comes back from finishing. Then you stage it again, how it goes together. And then it's like, wow.
Get to the bubble wrap, man. I know, that's what they're waiting for. I know.
Nobody sees that.
The step that you forgot was that when it hits the bench and you're sanding it ready for finishing, that's when the customer calls and wants a different color.
It's a sad, long process, but it's all necessary. Every single piece of it. Mm-hmm.
How many times have you guys had conversations with clients and they see the sample that you've given them and then they see the finished product and they don't see the same thing? But you've already educated them that the grain pattern, it's a different tree or it's maybe even the same tree, but it was harvested at a different time. That whole fiasco. You guys go through that all the time, right?
I don't.
Probably 25% of the clients. We do a really good job of showing them that at the beginning. Mm. We've been really on top of.
But how big of a sample are you showing them that?
We'll do like a, sometimes we'll do a 3x4.
Oh, really? That big of a, wow.
With veneer especially. And then we buy like one set of veneer, one log.
Yeah.
And then we give them a sample of that veneer and then we use that veneer for their entire job. So that they see that range before they purchase it, right? So they understand the range.
Have you not encountered sometimes, because I've been down that road before, where even the same batch was just like slightly off. And I don't know if like we were fighting natural daylight, we were fighting artificial light. We were just like, I don't get it. And I kept on getting to the conclusion of the tree was just slightly different at that time of the history of that tree or whatever. Something happened. Maybe someone was urinating on it. I don't know. Something happened. Mm-hmm. And it just made it a slightly, and then you're trying to match it together.
All the time.
Mm-hmm. And they're looking at it back and forth. They're like, is it my eyes? Is that eye? Like, I don't, like, yeah. And I don't get it. Then we have to change it. We just have to change it.
Yeah. We get that at all finishes too, not just veneer.
No, paint. Yeah.
We did a kitchen and we had it fully installed, painted, and the sample was slightly off. 27 Birkendale. We all hate that job. We ripped the entire kitchen out, repainted the entire thing, and reinstalled.
What are we talking about here, shade wise? Like,
shade, like it was so minor. So minor. Mm. Yeah. But just a shade. Natural light to LED shop light. Right? It might match perfect in a shop. You look at it, it might match perfect on the machine, gets to natural light, and it just.
But were they in the shop when they looked at the sample?
No. Not necessarily. Not usually.
I remember that.
Yeah.
There's a way out for them. That's the thing about it. There's a slight way out. Yeah. And then you guys have to rip it all out?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
That doesn't happen often. I think that's the only time.
But that's part of the world, right? That's just, and so anyone who's listening, like, just prepare for yourself for that. You're going to have clients that will be willing to pay what you're worth, but then if they don't see exactly what they want, mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. a conversation, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we used to, when I was in the industry, we used to have the clients sign off on our color sample. So we'd spray it up and put all the color that they thought that they wanted and then sign off it. And we had that piece of wood that we could always
reference,
take back and hold up against the cabinetry and say, this is what we, you know, what we match to.
Hmm. What if they like took the same sample and then took the finished product and was like, there's a little discrepancy, even though they signed off on it.
You always get that. Yeah,
I mean,
not much you can do there because the wood is a living, breathing thing. It will change.
I think you put the email of your optometrist on the back of your card.
Yeah,
and just send them off, and just like better, worse, better, worse, something like that, right?
Could just say you're a daredevil woodworker, right? You know, you just work by feeling. That's it. You know, it's
I'm a rogue. That's all it is. Don't worry, this is part of the process. This is why you hired me.
Yeah, I can sense the wood. It tells me it's right.
It's talking to you. Do you hear it? Yeah. And they'll actually agree with you. That's the thing about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Then they'll pay extra because they think you're crazy.
How's the hardware these days? Are we going crazy nowadays? Is there some new interesting things coming out?
There are usually Europeans.
Yeah. It all stems from the Italians or the Germans, right?
Germans, cool. Austrian.
Yeah. Austrian. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's got the best hardware these days? Or is there a preference? Are we going back to tools and glues kind of thing?
Depends on what the application is.
Okay.
Yeah, depends. But usually Austrians and Japanese.
Who's the Japanese brands that are?
I don't remember exactly, but they are very innovative.
They do a lot of the hidden kind of things that are buried it inside the wood, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I've seen
don't know what they're called either, but.
No, I know. I've seen some of them. I'm like, holy cow, that was never a thing back in the day, right? And mm-hmm. now it's all coming out and being a part of almost every piece, right?
Because
mm-hmm. people want all this hidden stuff. They just want it to look like there was just a piece of furniture attached mm-hmm. right there, right?
Because magic. There's no hinges.
Any new, like, kind of hardware things that you guys are seeing that are interesting, people are asking for in the cabinet world?
I think Neff is dealing with a lot of really interesting yeah. hardware.
Okay.
A lot of your, like, latches and stuff like that. I mean, I know that you guys are a fan of Blum a lot. Blum is cool.
German.
Yeah.
A lot of
yeah.
hidden stuff, like hidden pocket doors and things that retract, big doors that retract and open softly and effortlessly. Mm-hmm. A lot of that yeah. stuff, yeah.
Yeah, it's all yeah. soft yeah. now, right?
All soft.
It's all like got to be hidden soft, and soft.
Yeah. It's yeah. a standard, yeah.
yeah
it's not yes. soft, we don't
put it right.
Are the clients getting on the whole, I know that a few years ago, the train was all about the mechanisms, the motorized.
Turbo
drive. And I was like, you guys, this is stupid.
That's a terrible idea.
It's a terrible idea. You love them?
I love them, oh yeah.
You lose space in the back of the carcass, of the drawer. And then it's a pain in the ass to service them if they ever go down. And then it makes your world a nightmare for the electrician to have to put this all together.
We do 12-foot tall kitchens, so they're pretty helpful when you got cabinetry up that high.
Yeah.
And stuff down. It's useful. And when people have so much space, it doesn't matter. So from that perspective, from a client perspective, they really love it. And from our perspective, yeah, it's hard sometimes. But from a quality perspective, it's
to
really
just
nice.
Touch the face of the cabinet. Like when you could just pull it, like I don't.
It's unneeded strength being used. You know?
That's what it is.
I agree, it's unneeded, but it elevates you as a company being able to do that.
Until the kid or the dog keeps on touching the same spot over and over and over, and then you just got oil film marks, and you might as well just put print dust on it at that point because it's just going to stand out, right? That's why I don't think it. I don't know. Is it still people, clients asking? They're still asking for it, huh?
Yeah, touch latch and they'll hit.
Are they completely quiet? Because normally when I've seen them or been in trade shows and it's like there's a hum, right? So you can't really tell if there's noise there going on.
A slight hum.
I wonder how expensive those things are. Like, I'm sure they're not cheap. I know, like, from hardware that I see from, like, Richelieu and stuff like that, you know, can be quite expensive.
It'll add up because you start talking about how many carcasses you're dealing with here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not to mention the electrical you have to run.
I don't think it'd be too much because it's all run on drivers, so it's like minimum amount of that, right? But the problem is that if you start going down that rabbit hole, you're going to get those clients who are going to start asking you to accent light everything. And I'm not a huge fan of all the accent lighting going on everywhere, right? I don't need runway strips everywhere I go in a house, right?
It's actually quite popular. Well, I know why they're laughing, because that's a lot in their kitchens and everything, closets. Yeah.
Lighting's everywhere.
But it's like, what is that called? You walk by and it just turns on? Like, is there a specific name to that?
Censored lighting.
What do you mean, all the accent lighting? Well, the staircase, that makes sense. In the middle of the night, you're intoxicated, you need to go up or down, and you want to safely go up or down. But I mean, like, toe kick. Back of the cabinet, underneath the lip, on the countertop. Like, it's a lot of light, right? It's
everywhere, everywhere. Open cabinets, and that's a big thing in closets now. Yeah, I do all open cabinetry, face frame, with all lighting integrated.
So now you got to fold everything perfectly, hang everything perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Not very functional.
It's not, but it looks beautiful. The cabinetry looks beautiful.
Yeah.
It does look great in the photograph.
Yeah, but it's too bright. You walk into the room and say, whoa, you know.
It is, as I agree with you, it's way too much light. Even though it's dimly lit, it's still way too much light. And even staring at an LED is still a lot of lumens right into your eye, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's why now you start adding it everywhere. But that's where the mixed materials, now you got woodworkers coming in, you have to start having conversations with electricians, channeling, you know, lumen extrusions and whatever else you want to start designing, whatever else is going to be. Like, I think it's like less than 10 years ago that stone was being backlit. And now stone being backlit is just a norm thing now, right? Now you're starting to backlight panels of stone in shower applications. So it's like, how far are we going to get from doing a veneer and backlighting that and seeing the grain? If that's not, is that happening right now? Is that?
Oh, I haven't seen that like that. That's wild.
Not really.
That's a wild concept.
Let's do that.
If you got a veneer, it's 2 mil or something like that, and you put light behind it, the same panel LED, you're going to see the grains.
For
you're going to see a pattern there. It's almost going to be like taking frosted material and putting a tree branch or something behind it. You're going to see a pattern of some sort that is slightly recognizable. Mm-hmm. I guess
that's,
he's only
that's going to be hard to do, because how will the finish react to that? Like something like now, like
the lumen would have to be probably five times the amount, because you need to penetrate the light going through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we've all seen that where you've taken certain woods and lights are dark or whatever, and you had a flashlight. Mm. It will go through. So I'm pretty sure someone's doing it right now. Is it going to be good? I don't know. I don't know if it'd be good.
I don't think so.
I'm not a fan of the backlit stones. Yeah, I'm not a fan of it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's accent pieces is nice.
Maybe. Yes.
But everywhere is.
Everywhere is not. Like a full island waterfall and then full light. Mm-hmm. I'm not a fan of it, right? It's just more of the showing off thing. Mm-hmm. There's certain rooms, in my opinion, are supposed to be functional, right? Practical. Yep. Purpose-wise, right? So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that one, man. We're getting close to wrapping up, guys. Anything else you want to share that we tell the younger generation, the older generation, or the guys? Like, I love hearing about engineers that just quit their job and became a woodworker, right? I totally love that. Like, I want to do stuff with my hands. I don't want to do stuff in the office,
we
right?
We do see a lot of
that. I know. As well. I know you lawyers, do. I know.
Financial people.
Yes, because they had no purpose in life until they picked up a tool. Yeah.
Oh, it's peaceful. It's a little cathartic in a way, you know.
Yes, that's why. So, and they get a thrill out of it, and they're starting their whole second career, right, or third career, whatever it is. So, any words of wisdom for everybody, anybody? Stick to it.
Stick it out. Yeah.
Yeah, watch the blades.
Yeah. Yeah. Watch your fingers.
Go in with 10. Yeah. Come out with 10.
Yeah. Do the grunt work.
Sorry.
Do the grunt work. The
every too. Trade yeah. just no but
to, yeah. to gain that experience
yeah. yeah appreciate what the finished product is going to be.
Mm-hmm. Like, do you find that in like other trades that you talk with, do you find that's also like a major problem with them too? Like, that's just all around the board.
They all want to be at the top of the horse. Like, they don't want to do all the hard work.
Yeah,
I recently rant about it. I just said, you guys all want to enter at the top.
Yeah,
you don't want any bumps and bruises at the bottom. But those bumps and bruises are the ones that are going to teach you how to get out of a situation when you're at the top.
Yeah.
I guarantee you, instinctively, it will just help you. You'll know what to do. And if you don't do those hardships at the beginning, you'll be lost. And then you'll be like, what do I do now?
Yeah.
I think every trade has to do the hard work at first and just accept it. Get over that hump and just move it. The bowl towards the storm kind of mentality, right?
Part of that too is that in that kind of work environment, to understand those folks that have the experience and you know, zip the lip and listen to what they're saying, because they've got that experience. They probably have done that issue or that problem, and they now know how to correct it.
Yep.
So yeah,
like you guys said earlier, it's really about how you guys solve your mistakes.
Yeah.
Yep.
The bag of tricks, right?
Yeah.
So you need to learn those mistakes first.
Yeah, for exactly. sure.
Yeah.
Even for the unexperienced woodworkers or, you know, apprentices that are just getting out there, don't go and buy, you know, a Festool drill right off the bat, you know, like, you know, take your time.
You know, don't but it makes them feel like they know how to use the tool if they buy it, right?
Yeah.
I disagree. I know I disagree.
Just don't do it.
Just get a regular whatever tool you want, or borrow a corded version of it from somebody that wants to get rid of it, and just start working your way up. Eventually, you will get to the one tools that you want to buy, and they'll be yours. And you can engrave them. You can put your initials on them, and then you can build things, and then you can give that dirty look to that person who wants to borrow it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But you have to get to that point, right?
Yeah.
Totally. We all have to get to that point. Trevor Hibbs, right?
Yep.
Hibbs, professor, School of Engineering and Technology and Trades of Apprenticeship at Conestoga. And then your email to get a hold of you. I can share that, right?
Yep.
THIBBS at Conestoga, Conestoga C.
Yep.
.on.ca. And then Mitch, your email is Mitch, BOSNYAK at gmail.com. And his email or his IG is BOZZYB00TS. And then Nathan, NateB95 at iCloud.com. And then your IG is NathanBanks95. And then Saleh.
Saleh, yeah.
Saleh. Sorry, man. I just.
It's all right.
I'm used to it. No, no. Well, you kept on telling me, call him Zach. Call him Zach. SalZakar at gmail.com. And his IG is SalEhZakk.
Yes.
You guys ready for the 12 questions of construction?
Oh, heck yeah.
We'll do the 12 questions of, I guess, woodworking. We just do this at the end of every single show. Mm-hmm. There's no right or wrong. You guys can't get any of these all wrong. Right. You can veto them if you want. What is your favorite woodworking word? We'll just go, I guess.
Favorite.
Woodworking word.
I can't think of one. Yeah. Pencil. That's what a lot of people sharp forget pencil. To bring with them. Yeah.
Sharp pencil.
Finger joint.
That's a good one.
Just grab it.
I wanted to say
that. It's taller. Grab it. Just grab it.
Describe it better. Yeah. Something like that. Something related to scribing.
Scribing? Okay. Least favorite tool.
Least
favorite tool. So,
like a brand or?
No, it could be anything. Metaphorically. It could be
sanding block.
Sanding block.
I mean, somewhere along the same lines of sanding. You know what? I'm just going to go ahead and differ from that. Say shaper.
Yeah, I guess it's the same. Those things are terrifying.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah.
Shaper?
I was going to say shaper, actually, yeah.
Okay.
Handy screwdriver.
Which one? Phillips, flat, Robbie? Any of them?
Whichever, yeah.
Any of them? What woodworking sound do you guys love?
Oh.
I would have to say the CNC running. I quite enjoy that because if I programmed it.
In the middle of it or at the startup? Or as
no, the middle of it.
In the middle of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's always that startup when you're kind of, okay, did I set those depths right? And you kind of, until it starts to run. Once it's machining what it's supposed to be doing, then, yeah, I quite enjoy that.
For me, probably spraying with a spray gun. Just the sound of paint coming out or lacquer, sealer, whatever. I don't know. Oddly satisfying.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Love a good hard piece of maple going through a planer, a general classic planer.
That's loud.
Yeah, loud. Yeah. Or shaper.
Shaper? Yeah. Favorite beverage?
Scotch.
Particular brand?
Single malt. I don't care which.
Hennessy.
Don't really have one. But if I say one, I'd say scotch as well.
It doesn't have to be alcoholic. Like, I mean.
Yeah. You could say Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
Mountain Dew's good.
You hate Mountain Dew.
The Dew. No, I love scotch.
Coffee.
Coffee?
Yeah.
What turns you on and off in woodworking?
I would say really well done joinery.
Turns you on?
Turns me on. And then turns me off poorly done joinery.
The end stage before my elevation is going to be wrapped up. That's the nice part. That's what I like.
Okay.
Like just looking at that and just taking it in. I built this. It's great. Thing I hate the most is if I am very specific. This is very specific. If I'm cutting aluminum, okay, and just the sound of aluminum. I hate working with aluminum.
It's a horror sound. Mm.
I hate it.
Yeah.
Horror stories.
Walking away from a final install when I've scribed every piece and haven't used caulking. That is the best feeling. And least favorite is looking at a design or a drawing that can't be built from a designer that doesn't know how things go together.
Yeah,
that never happens.
Yeah. Only 99% of the time.
Especially the ones that have never been on the site.
Yeah.
Seen the site conditions.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, a very awkward room, like...
shape?
Yeah, like the wall is not straight.
Oh, plumbing level you're talking about.
Yes,
oh.
Plumbing level. That's
like filler room.
Yeah. That for me is no.
Okay, so that's the off, but what's the on?
The end grain. seeing the end grain, like a surface with end grain pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's nice. Yeah. Favorite curse word?
Curse word. Crap.
Well, this one can range.
Depending on the task.
Well, you know, tradesmen, we have a lot of different words. Right? You know what? I'm going to go very simple. The one that starts with F and ends with K.
Damn it.
Damn it.
Are you mental?
Listen, ponder. favorite vehicle? Any mode of transportation?
Canoe.
A lot of portaging going on?
Yeah, not recently.
But but season's years, coming around.
Yeah. Yeah. My joints and bones don't like that so much anymore.
Hmm. You know what? Cars have been giving me a lot of trouble lately, so I don't have a favorite car right now.
In this any current, mode of transportation.
It so can my be. Feet. My feet. Okay. You know what? They haven't screwed me over this week, so we'll leave it at that.
R34 Skyline GTR.
In blue, of course, right?
In blue, of course.
Of course.
For me, it's the sound of old train. It puts me to sleep.
The click.
Yeah.
The little rackety.
Yeah.
And all made out of wood.
Yeah.
See what I mean? Yeah. I would love to see the GO train to be all old wood school. You know? Wouldn't that be nice? More people would take the GO.
Yes, I guess.
I like that one. What do you guys miss from your childhood?
You're asking me to remember that far back?
If you can.
I guess...
a lot of children, adults out here, you know?
Yeah,
in the industry.
True, yeah. What is it called now? The wagon wheels.
Oh.
Yeah. Haven't had one of those in a long time.
You talking about like the radio flyers, right? Is that what you?
No, I'm talking about the dessert thing.
Oh, the like dessert. A, yeah, oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Joe Louis. Yeah. Same
thing. Right? Well, wow. Kind of. Similar. Had, like, the biscuit with the marshmallow and covered in chocolate.
Yeah.
They're both unhealthy. Like it's
just,
absolutely.
What do I miss from childhood? Probably not having to worry about money, or just generally like, hey, bills. Yeah.
Getting banged up and being able to get up and do it again. Not having to go to physio.
Sounds like you have back issues.
Kids never went to physio, eh? Kids didn't go to physio.
57, yeah.
But if you go. For me, both my grandmothers.
Mm.
Yeah.
Nice. What profession do you guys want to attempt one day?
Maybe we're all just already living the dream.
Could be.
That could be.
Could be. That's an option.
I'm quite happy where I am.
Totally fine.
Yeah. I think I'm quite happy where I am. I want to delve more into the business side of it. I want to try to figure that out a lot more. And
it's important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I tell the kids all the time, man, practice that. Mm-hmm. The skills are second nature to you guys. You guys will build that really fast, but the business side, you won't mm-hmm. build it as fast.
Yeah, I'd agree. I love doing this from the get-go and just
awesome.
Get better and be an owner. Has something that they call their own in this industry would be amazing.
Yeah, for me, learning more about it and combining different material, like glass and wood, leather and wood, right?
Nice. What profession do you guys never want to do?
I would say ditch digging. Down in the mud.
Calluses.
Yeah.
As soon as you said that, instantly I knew right away. Drywalling. I'm okay. I'm good. I'm okay.
Residential electrical.
Residential electrical. Driving.
Driving?
Yeah, I don't want to drive people around.
Last question. If heaven exists, so what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
Here's the wood shop.
Yeah, make me something.
Welcome home.
I don't know.
Nothing comes to mind?
Yeah, nothing comes
to mind. Nothing comes to mind? Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you.
Enlightened a lot of people, and hopefully people are listening and appreciate the words that you guys shared. So,
thanks for having us.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you. And we're going to do the second show with Mike and his group, and then we'll get more insight there.
Cool. Thanks a lot for having us.
That's it. Yeah. Thank you. We're out of here, guys.